make sure you're utilizing those resources to you, especially our guys here in the Southeast, those county agents that can help you take that soil test so you know what's going on, can help you get that forage analysis so that we can really cater that nutrition program to your forage base is just so important.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lalamond Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Welcome to the Beef Podcast. I'm Travis Molinix, and today I have Dr. Maggie Justice. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So a little background on Maggie is that she is Assistant Professor of Beef Extension Specialist at University of Arkansas. She did her PhD at Auburn, right? And bachelor's and master's at Clemson. So she is a bona fide Southeasterner.
That's right. I really like the Tigers and had to stay in the Southeast somehow.
Yep. And so that kind of goes into what we're going to talk about is beef production and management in the Southeast. That is kind of your realm of the world and a lot of experience.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk about it and dive into it today.
Good. So just give your background outside of what we just discussed is how did you get here of your position as the beef extension specialist at Arkansas?
Yeah. So as you said, I'm a Southeastern born and bred. I grew up in kind of the lower part of South Carolina on my family's commercial cow-calf operation. So been evaluating cattle for my whole life. One of four girls, and like most of our farms in the Southeast, it was a secondary income for my parents, so it was all hands on deck. Grew up super active in the 4-H program, and that kind of led me to an early life of exposure in extension, so very easy for me to kind of follow in my parents' and my sister's footsteps to go to Clemson. And when I got to Clemson, I knew I didn't want to be a vet, but I didn't quite know how I was going to fit in the animal science world.
Right.
So discovered research pretty early on through a great mentor. And I kind of say the rest is history. Discovered that I loved research, but also still working with producers. So extension was just a natural fit for me. So to be able to land this job here at the University of Arkansas right out of my PhD was awesome. And I love being here and have some great mentors as well.
And you're on campus there as well?
Actually, no. So we're a little bit different here at the U of A. I'm actually in our state extension office in Little Rock. So I sit in the center of the state to better serve our producers throughout the entire state.
Yep. So there's pros and cons to that. But as an extension specialist, being centrally located is important.
Yes. I love Fayetteville, but not having to drive 6 or 7 hours to get to other parts of the state is really nice.
True. All right. Let's move into the topic at hand and talk about managing cows in the Southeast. Like a lot of environments, or most environments we manage beef cows, there's a lot of fluctuations in forage quality, in rainfall, even in heavy rainfall areas of the Southeast that get a lot of rainfall. You know, you do have a lot of fluctuations that change forage quality, that dynamics. And so how can beef producers maximize the use of their pastures year round off of the basis of that fluctuation of rainfall?
So I would have to say that the best thing producers can do is, one, know their system and then utilize the resources available to them. So I love talking grass. So, you know, I'm a cow and grass nerd. And so, and especially here in the Southeast where we have that temperature to be able to grow forages almost year round. But still, you know, we can differ just in the state. I like to pick that I-40 right here in Little Rock is my line. I've got my tall fescue guys above me and my Bermuda and Bahia grass guys below me. And so knowing what the backbone of their system is really important. So our, you know, our plans for our warm season perennial guys is going to be really different from our cool season perennial guys. And then, you know, utilizing those resources to them, especially through extension. So having that soil test, so knowing how their soil is going to react and what fertilization plan that needs to follow to utilize the forages they have. And then, you know, utilizing their forage quality test as well for their pastures and the hay that they're growing can really help us build a better overall plan. If we need to make some adjustments to the pasture to make it better and utilize it year round, or if we need to utilize their supplementation program to help enhance the forages that they have on hand.
Yeah, so I spent some time at University of Tennessee after I did my PhD. And, you know, coming from the Western United States to the Southeast, it was, you know, the amount of rainfall is big, but also, you know, you get 11 months of high quality forages, right? 10, 11 months of growth. And so, but one of the challenges that I found was a lot of guys would stock to that peak growth potential in the spring, and then they'd run out of forage and want to feed hay for 6 months out of the year. And in that environment, coming from somewhere we didn't feed hay at all, of, you know, we got one growing season, if that, and then moving to an environment of all that rainfall, all that growing season. So what do you say to producers, help producers get out of that mindset of you are a grass farmer? We all are grass farmers, right? But how do you get out of that mindset of how do you manage that cow herd and that forage quality or that quantity that you have of how do you maximize that or optimize those in those situations?
No, absolutely. That's probably one of the challenges I face almost every single day, especially going on producers' farms and, you know, thinking about my recommendations, Travis, because like you said best, I mean, we're grass farmers first. And then we can utilize that for the cattle. And so I think sometimes our hay feeding can be almost a safety blanket because we get so worried about, well, you know, what if we don't get rain? You know, what if I can't plant? What's going to happen? And so I tell guys that one, we have to have a little bit of faith. And then we also have to think about our management. So that stocking rate is going to be a big kicker. And a lot of times guys will ask me about it. And the first thing I have to tell them is that maybe we have a few more head than we should. And so if we really reevaluate that stocking rate first, and then think about our forage management, and that maybe we need to close the gate a few times and let that pasture rest just a little bit and not get too antsy just because we've got some green forage coming up. But also think about how we can be creative with our management, whether that be through grazing management like rotational grazing, mob grazing, creep grazing. Feeding cattle on your operation is so unique to each person, but we have the tools available to us to really maximize that pasture we have on hand.
Yeah, and that's very important when you think about feed costs. And, you know, your feed cost for, you know, your cow herd is going to be about 60-65% of your annual cow costs. So how can we minimize that cost with our grazing? And so that's very important from that standpoint.
Yes. No, whenever I'm making a nutrition plan with my guys, that's the first thing we're talking about. That base is going to be our forages. And I remind them that we're really quick to think we need to throw that bucket of feed out every day or put that protein tub in the pasture. And a lot of times we may not need to do that. Our forages, especially those that we can grow down here in the Southeast, really meet us at the table. So I think that first step is truly understanding your forages, because understanding our forages and then understanding where our herd is at. Because if, you know, we're in that dry period, our gals are not lactating and they're just waiting on that next calf to come, you know, even some of our lower quality forages like our Bermuda and our Bahia grasses can really fulfill her needs. And we may not have to spend that money on supplemental feeding. But, you know, if we're trying to get 2 to 3 pounds of gain per day on a group of stocker calves, those warm season perennials may not quite get us there, but they can get us pretty far in that feeding program. So understanding where our pastures are at and what they can provide, and then understanding where our herd is at, is going to be kind of the building foundation of our plan.
So what are some of the most challenging feeding problems that your producers are faced with?
Well, right now, I would say it's probably the weather, like always. In fact, today we're in the middle of a 3-day storm system that we're going to get dumped with about 10 to 11 inches across the state. But before this system came in, we were dry and we were worried about spring forages. So definitely it's first the weather. And then I would have to say that our biggest challenge is probably going into that winter season and that fall transitional period. So we're coming off of a summer of good grasses, and we're not quite there with our cool season forages, or maybe we haven't gotten them planted yet. And so really defining that fall transition period and how our guys can really maximize what they have or utilize other resources to them, I would say is probably our most challenging time.
So what kind of strategies do you recommend? I mean, we got stockpiling, but what other, you know, strategies do you recommend or work with producers to do to achieve their goals within that?
So you said it best. Stockpiling is one of the really cool aspects that we can do. I really like talking to guys about stockpiling, especially if they're utilizing a pasture as a hay field as well. Maybe we don't try to push that last cutting and we let the cattle do the cutting for us. And that can also really help with the overall health of that pasture as well. But also, you know, we can get a little bit creative. Our forage team is also working with some of our producers on some planting of some late summer annuals as well. And so recognizing we may not get that full productive season out of them that we would if we planted them back in May, but that we might get another good grazing event out of them. And then, of course, like I said, being creative with our supplementation, like how can we utilize our feeding strategies to stretch our pastures just a little bit as well. So, you know, maybe giving a little bit higher energy supplementation so they're not diving into the grass as hard and we can stretch what pasture we have left. But like I said, kind of thinking about what our operations can handle and how we can be a little bit creative in that time.
Yeah, understanding those forage dynamics is very important, especially, and you touched on drought, and we'll get to drought later, but your droughts and my droughts are totally different, and it doesn't take very much decrease in rain in that environment to have an impact, right? You know, you just said you're getting, you know, 8 to 10 inches of rain. That's in a lot of environments, that's what we get year round. And so that's a massive amount of rainfall, but so there's a lot of challenges, but there's a tremendous amount of opportunities if you understand your environment well. And so some of the feedstuffs that you have available or we have in the United States, like cottonseed meal is probably one of the most fed protein supplements in the United States, in the world. Distillers grains is very popular. So, and you have those, you have a lot of those options at the table. So how do you fit some of those byproduct feeds into your systems to be able to, you know, optimize these forage systems and for these producers to meet their goals?
Yes. No, you're bringing out my nerd in me today, Travis. I cattle are such awesome animals in the fact that we can utilize these byproduct feeds, and especially where we are in the United States, we really have a cool opportunity in that. When I first moved to Arkansas, I had to learn about rice real fast because that's another awesome use of crop byproducts that our producers can utilize. So again, I kind of go back to some questions I want my producers to ask themselves. You know, what are they going to feed? When are they going to feed it? And ultimately, can they handle it? And so making sure that they recognize what they need, whether it's an energy or a protein supplement or both, and then looking at that, you know, what is that feed actually costing you cost per nutrient? And so if a byproduct like a cottonseed meal or dried distillers grains is the best option for them, then we move forward. Because, you know, I tell guys, I would love to balance all the rations in the world with DDGs. But if they don't have a good co-op or a good provider for that close by, or they don't have a means to store it, it may not be the best option for them. But if we can utilize byproducts like that, a lot of times it's going to be a cheaper option for them and still get a nutrient dense product with them.
So what about a balanced nutrition program? You think about in these systems, because you have a lot of flexibility, you have tremendous amount of flexibility that a lot of us do not have. And so when you think about a balanced nutritional program, what does that look like for your producers?
Yes, I count myself very lucky with where I am in the world, because I won't lie to you. The first time I stood in a feed yard in West Kansas, I just wanted to know where the green was. But I had a mentor once tell me that, you know, nutrition does not come in a bag. As much as we would love for it to, it doesn't. And so to me, a balanced nutrition program for us is starting at that forage base, understanding what we have available to us, and then building from there. So think about the supplement that we need to complement our forage base with, or help kind of build up what's going on. And then we're also going to think about the vitamins and minerals aspect to it. And then, of course, not forgetting about the little things like, again, how are we going to feed it, whether it's going to be in from that 5-gallon bucket daily, in a self feeder, in a tub. And then, of course, not forgetting about the little things like making sure that water source is good and clean and available to them as well.
Yeah. How are we going to feed it is such an important question. And there is tremendous amount of waste, and there's a tremendous amount of cost associated with how are we going to feed it. And that's a whole different discussion, but that's a tremendous point of asking that question of how are we going to feed this? Because a lot of producers, they don't think about that, and they purchase something not realizing it's going to cost them a lot more money because how they're going to feed it.
I have this conversation quite a lot with my producers, and because I just don't think that sometimes they're so focused on, I need to take the bucket of feed every single day to the field. And so, you know, having that conversation with them that maybe you do take the bucket of feed every day to the field, or maybe our grass is providing enough to us that we don't need to do that. Or, you know, maybe you have cattle on lease land that's like 20 minutes away from your home base. And so you might not be able to go every single day. So while those tubs might be a little bit more expensive option for you, it right now it might be the best option for you because those cattle are still getting the opportunity to have a complete nutrition plan available to them at all times.
Yeah, it's like feeding a starch supplement and thinking that you can feed it every other day or every 3 days like you can a protein source, and you're just not going to get the benefit. Or feeding a mill, distillers or cottonseed mill, on the ground and having a large waste on the ground, that's going to cost you a lot more money than that tub per se.
Absolutely. And you know, even talking to guys about how we can strategically feed hay as well to help avoid some of that waste is really important, because there's so many different options to us. And just because it works for your neighbor down the road doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And recognizing that, I think, is a big waste opportunity sometimes that we don't recognize.
So previously we touched on drought, and drought's a big deal anywhere we go. And in environments that you're getting 30 plus inches of rain per year, it doesn't take much shortage of rain within that week of having a situation that you may have limited forage growth, et cetera. And so how do y'all deal with drought in your environment?
So, you know, Travis, we can deal with it a couple of different ways. And so there's a lot of different factors that go into it too. Right now with the cattle market as high as it is, I'd say that guys probably deal with it a little bit differently than they have in some years that maybe cull cow prices aren't as high as they are. But kind of some of the first things I want producers to think about is that pasture health. So we want to utilize that pasture as long as we can, without sacrificing the future of that pasture, because we can get as much out of that pasture as possible. But if we completely strip graze it down to the ground and then actually do get that rain, then we risk that our pasture is not healthier or where we need it to be. And then I would say making sure that we are using our supplementation wisely. So like I kind of alluded to earlier, you know, we can think about our feed plans like energy, and that can kind of help pull back some of the forage intake that they're having, and that can help stretch what we already have. And then, you know, in times of extreme drought, we do have our guys that have to go ahead and dip into their hay storage and start feeding hay a little bit early. And so when we get into a moment like that, you know, I like our county agents to talk to our guys about, you know, how can we roll hay out to make sure that we're not having any hay waste during that time. And really, again, thinking about that, we're making sure that we're utilizing all of those resources available to us and minimizing waste as much as possible. And then, you know, we still have a good number of producers that utilize ponds as water sources as well. So during times of drought, we really worry about that, not just the ponds getting low on us, but the weather impact they can have on ponds. So making sure that cattle are still having that fresh water available to them, and not losing sight on the little things that are happening.
So when I moved to Tennessee, I moved from Montana to Tennessee, and we, in Montana at the time, we went through a drought that we didn't get any growing season for an entire year. So when I moved to Tennessee, they were doing drought meetings, and the grass was green. And I'm looking around, what are they talking about, a drought? Because there was all this green grass, but it was short in growth. It was not growing. And so, you know, when we talk about drought, sometimes we think about the severe instances that just, you know, no forage or just lack of really a growing season. But in your situation, not having rain for 2 or 3 weeks really hurts your forage growth. And so, and that's something I learned pretty quickly, that it wasn't, you know, necessarily the amount of rainfall, but it was not having that consistent rainfall in your systems that really hurts all that forage growth. And so having that flexibility is so important in that system.
Yes. And you said it, you know, going 2 weeks without rain in some of our soil types here in the Southeast, can really throw us off our game a little bit. But then we have, you know, a rain event, and all of a sudden it's a completely different world. We were super dry back in this past fall here throughout the state of Arkansas, and it really impacted, you know, some of our winter planting. And my research station director and I had a lot of conversations about it, because I'm in the middle of a cool season annual research project, and we got real nervous. We were starting to have the conversation about, well, you know, if we can't plant, what are we going to do? And right there at the end of October, we had one rain event, and the guys there at the station, they took a chance, they planted, and we were grazing by the end of December on that project, and we're still grazing, have healthy grass, and it looks great. But it took one rain event after several weeks without rain, and we were back right at it.
So when we think about your systems, and we talk about supplementation, we drought, but how do you tailor your nutritional programs around all of that? You also have smaller cow herds that are going to be mixed cow herds. And so you're going to have some lactating cows, you could have some gestating cows, you're going to have heifers within those groups. So how do you tailor your nutritional programs for your producers?
So in an ideal world, as I tell my guys, you know, we know where our herd is at, and hopefully we have that defined calving season so that we can focus on those high nutritional needs during just a very specific time of the year. But like I said, that's an ideal world. Doesn't happen all the time. So, you know, I tell my guys as I'm building a plans for them, that's one of my top questions, like, where is your herd at, and what is our end goal? You know, where are we trying to be in the next couple of months? And so if we can separate them out by groups, and so making sure that that highest nutritional need group, whether that be heifers we're developing, steers we're growing out, or our peak lactation cows, making sure that maybe they're separate from the rest of the herd so that we can really focus on their needs and really cater that plan to them. And then the other half of the herd, like I said earlier, you know, if we don't have to throw supplement to them, if the forage is going to hold us over, that can really save us in terms of our wallets and our pocketbooks. But making sure that we're feeding to that highest nutritional need. And if we can separate them out, that's perfect. Because we can really make sure that those animals aren't fighting at the trough and are getting what they need, and also not spending those extra dollars where we don't have to.
And that's the tough balance, is you have that high nutrient requirement cow, and then you have a lower requirement cow in there. So one is either going to get underfed or overfed. And so it's going to cost you more, or it's going to hurt you on a reproductive calf growth standpoint. So that's really hard to balance when a producer cannot sort those off.
Yeah, it presents a challenge to us. But, you know, a lot of times with our average herd size being as small as it is, it can be a challenge, but it's not as big of a challenge sometimes. But, you know, having those conversations with them, showing them how a diet could differ if we did split off the group, and if we can't, making sure that we're still catering to those highest needs, so that they're not lacking in any part of their diet.
Well, Maggie, did we miss anything you want to touch on as we wrap this up?
And, you know, as an extension specialist, I'm always going to say, make sure you're utilizing those resources to you, especially our guys here in the Southeast, those county agents that can help you take that soil test so you know what's going on, can help you get that forage analysis so that we can really cater that nutrition program to your forage base is just so important.
Yeah, extension is such a underutilized and a great opportunity for producers to get that help they need of, like you say, soil testing, forage testing, to just, you know, nutrients and designing supplement strategies to fit their needs, and do it for free because they're paying for your time, right? And so that's a great resource to producers.
Absolutely. And hey, again, I repeat, I chose this career, and those county agents love what they do. And so utilize that resource.
It's time for our famous three.
A high-functioning rumen drives herd performance, gut health, and profitability. Levucel SC by Lelemon Animal Nutrition is the only naturally occurring rumen-specific active dry yeast probiotic designed to optimize rumen function, boost fiber digestion, and help you get more out of your native rangeland or pasture. No matter how you supplement your herd, include Levucel SC to help your cows grow bigger calves. Discover the right formulation for your herd at ChooseLevucelSC.com.
And so I've got three questions here. The first one being, what is your go-to beef-related resource? Could be book, website. What do you recommend someone utilizing?
So, again, I'm an extension person at heart. So I would have to say that, you know, growing up through grad school and even now, extension publications, those are, especially here in the Southeast, we have such good extension programs throughout the country. Even if it's not your state that has the answer, sometimes neighboring states might have it. And then for me, of course, it's going to be the producers that I work with. Like, you know, I was on a farm just 2 weeks ago with the county agent, and that producer had been raising heifers for longer than I'd been alive. So having those conversations with them, I still utilize my dad a lot. I'll send him articles and be like, hey, can you read this to make sure that I'm don't sound too academic, and getting to evaluate cattle and talk cattle business with those producers. It's the best part of my job.
And I think we just set that question up before I asked that question. But again, extension is such a tremendous resource that, you know, other countries do not have that benefit of the extension services.
Absolutely.
What is a non-ag book that you recommend someone reading?
Ooh, well, I had an answer when y'all originally talked to me about the podcast, because I'm a frequent listener of y'all. So I knew that these questions were coming, but I'm going to change my answer today. I just finished Lazy Bee, the story of Sandra Day O'Connor growing up on her family's Southwest cattle ranch. And as a female in the industry, it was such a really cool book to read. And then, you know, seeing how growing up in the cattle industry impact such an awesome woman in our country's history was really, really cool. So I'm all about some biographies and autobiographies these days.
Nice. I have to look that one up. So lastly, what sets apart a successful beef professional?
Ooh, I think I would have to say one that listens and then one that is willing to say, I don't know. I had to get really comfortable doing that. It's hard as a young extension specialist coming in and feeling like you have to prove yourself in this industry. And I have so many great mentors here in the state of Arkansas and from my other programs at Auburn and Clemson. And I think looking back, seeing those mentors having that confidence to say, you know, right now I don't know that answer, but I'll find it for you.
You can tell you are an extension specialist by that answer, because, you know, that's the keys to being a good extension specialist is listening. And so that's something that we miss out on sometimes, to thinking we know the answer and we want to say something. But if we just listen, we actually sometimes hear the true question that they're asking.
Yeah.
And so that's very important.
And I take it very seriously that, you know, producers are taking my recommendations and my advice to heart for their operations to make money. And so I had to get real comfortable and watch those mentors of mine being able to say, I don't know, but let me find that answer for you.
No, that's very important. Well, Maggie, thanks for jumping on the podcast. Really enjoyed talking to you about beef production in the Southeast.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for having me. It's been fun.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.